I remember shortly after I completed 3 years of working as a social worker in the inner city of Montreal. The following year, I went with my wife Wendy to Vancouver to study for the ministry at Vancouver School of Theology. And a book came out in 1984 entitled Please Understand Me, written by David Kiersey. I don't know if any of you have seen that or have heard of it. It was a really strange experience when I read that book. It was the first popularization of what some of you may know as the Myers-Briggs type indicator. Those of you probably working in government service or in business, you've probably all gone through those workshops to find out what type you are, you know, extrovert, introvert, sensing, feeling, thinking, sensing, perceiving, and judging. And this book popularized that and talked about how we understand the human community in 16 different types. Now, what was strange, and it was more than strange, it was actually a little bit unsettling and alarming, is when I read that book and I had completed the MBTI, I am, for those who are curious, I am an ENFP, whatever that means to you. When I read that book, I became a little frightened. And why I became frightened is because the descriptions under those who are ENFP felt like somebody had been camping outside my window and observing me and following me around. It knew me too well. It described a lot of me very well, and it made me realize, I guess there are certain ways in which the human community is clumped together, as it were, in terms of dispositions. But as I read more and discerned a little bit more, I realized that it only goes so far. That there are gaps in it, obviously, because it's an imperfect tool, but it was initially something that tapped into what I believe is in all of us, which is the tension between wanting to be fully known and appreciated and loved, and yet not wanting anyone to know us too well because there are hidden secrets in our lives. Do you know that tension? Everybody is staring at me like they don't know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. The psalm today can occasion similar fright and comfort, because Psalm 139 is, beyond all other psalms, one that the psalmist declares unequivocally the profoundly complete and intimate knowledge that God has of each and every one of us. There is nothing that you can hide from God. Sees it all, knows it all. Completely. More than the MBTI, more than please understand me, more than these types. We are all laid bare before God. Now that can be at one and the same time frightening and comforting. And it is because we come into this world, I believe, with a deep penchant and desire to be known, to be pursued for who we really are. We have that in us. A few weeks ago on the television, that epic film starring Brad Pitt, Troy, was on. Some of you have seen that, huh? Based on the story in the 9th century B.C., taking place in Greece, the king of Greece, Menelaus, whose wife Helen was beautiful and so forth, until Paris, who was a prince of Troy, came to visit. And as the tale goes, depending what version, fell in love with Helen and she with him, and in the dead of night spirited her away back to Troy. And Menelaus, who was the king of Greece, and his brother, king of a larger territory as well, Agamemnon, decided that they were going to wage war and lay siege to Troy. And they amassed a huge army with 1,000 ships and landed on the coast and laid siege to Troy, and there results that story of the Trojan horse. You remember that indeed. But that story is a very interesting archetype in a way. Helen must have been some woman. That's all I can say. Because there were men on both sides laying down their lives for this one woman just so two men could fight over her. She was perhaps the ultimate epitome of someone who was pursued. Wouldn't you like to be that pursued? I don't think so, not at that cost, not at all that death. But there's a part of me that would love for the world and for those who are dear to me to pursue the real me and to love what they see in all of its ugliness and beauty. We have that desire. And so the psalmist is trying to tap into that deep, deep desire. You have searched me and you know me, O Lord. Even before a thought is on my tongue, you know it. If I go this way, you are there. If I go to Timbuktu, you are there. Behind me, in front of me, all around me, you are there, O God. For I, the psalmist goes on to say, am fearfully and wonderfully made. Even in my womb, you were there. Now that's challenging in itself. Aquia, that's challenging. And it is because if God has made us so wonderfully and knows us, what does that mean in light of sickness in the womb? What does that mean for children who are born, maybe before their time or deformed? What does it mean for the kind of woundedness that we carry and experience in our lives? If God, you have made me so wonderfully and you know me, don't you know what I'm going through? Don't you know the burdens I carry? What does it mean? Does God know us too well? Well, let's leave that question hanging, because I think that as we explore what the psalmist is saying is that there is nothing that we can experience, whether beauty and joy or pain and distress, that is not known to God. The question is, how do we figure out what knowing and being intimately involved means and looks like, given the hardship and heartache that we endure, as well as the celebration and joy that we delight in. Even in little Jessica, never mind, she's got her lungs and that's fine, as we delighted in her baptism today. Well, let's see if perhaps the conversation that exists between Psalm and the parable can bear out some learning for us. And as I studied this and reflected on it, it seemed more and more like these two texts were talking with and to each other and for our benefit. What Jesus says in the parable is a very profound thing, something that you and I in our heart and in our lives need to take very, very seriously. For he tells them of a farmer like they would have been accustomed to, going out to sow seed. Good seed, we're told, it was good seed in good soil. And all of a sudden, when harvest time comes, we realize that weeds have been growing up in between the good wheat. And the servants come to him and they say, well, should we pluck out the weeds? And the boss says, no, leave them. And in order to understand fully some of the significance, we know that Jesus drew from examples that people of his day would know very well. And the tares, or the weeds that he was referring to, are the darnel, the bearded darnel. And the thing is, it's a kind of form of rye grass, and it looks exactly like wheat until the ears appear. You cannot tell the difference. And I think that this is a profound symbol and parable for our lives, and why God needs to know us so well, and why that is both, in a sense, discomfort as well as good news. It is that good and evil are not always easy to discern. They grow together. We have a hard time identifying them. We tend to think that we know, just leave it to our wisdom, how to discern who's a good person and who's an evil person. Isn't that not true? What is a good situation and an evil situation? And the parable is challenging us in the depths of our heart to realize that they sometimes are indistinguishable until an appointed time. This is true of people and it is true of situations. There are times when it looks like a child is heading down the wrong way and this child is to be written off, and there's so many in our society, in our communities, who are ready to do that. They have been designated evil. They need to be plucked out of the good society and cast away. Because somebody somewhere decides they know the difference between wheat and weeds, between good and evil. And Jesus says, sometimes you just can't tell. You can't tell because good and evil sometimes is not, or too often, is not a question of one person and another. It is what is in each and every one of our hearts. Is that not true? For there are times when we can act in the ways of goodness, and there are times when we are complicit and cooperate with evil. The same person, the same heart, the same hands, the same thoughts, the same body. You can't tell. So, in other words, Jesus says, let them grow. And even though decisions need to be made, perhaps the best way in dealing with the evil that is in our midst and even in our lives is to do what the parable suggests. Is to be the obedient, responsive, loving, serving, unencumbered, loving people and disciples that Jesus calls us to be. Maybe the best way to confront evil is with a testimony of grace and joy and service and ethics and justice. And let God, as the parable says, do the judging. As somebody once said, thank God that God judges. Not you and not me. I think that Frederick Buechner puts it well, and he talks about this longing and this kind of tension in us, as well as Carl Jung. Frederick Buechner, he writes about how we come into the world, that what happens when we come with that appetite and how we are pressured. He writes, the world sets in making us what the world would like us to be. And because we have to survive, after all, we try to make ourselves into something we hope the world will like better than it apparently did the selves we originally were. That is the story of our lives, needless to say. And in the process of living out that story, the original shimmering self gets buried so deep that most of us hardly end up living out of it at all. Instead, we live out all of the other selves which we are constantly putting on and taking off like coats and hats against the world's weather. We know the fronts we put forward. We know the roles we play. We know the masks we wear and the pretenses making people believe we are something we are not. We know that. The world bends us out of shape. And here into the midst of that reality comes the psalmist's words. God knows us and knows what we are really like and what we're really capable of, both good and bad. And it is this God who works with us to exterminate those things we would rather hide. You see, the parable, in a sense, is a little bit like Jungian theory in psychology. Jung talked about the shadow self. And the shadow self that all of us have are those areas in our lives, the garbage and the sin and the greed and those things that we stuff down and try to hide. We try to pretend they're not there. We try to pretend we are good people, better than perhaps we really are. And the challenge is, it is that shadow side that works on us and operates and causes us to act in ways that we are surprised and shocked at in ourselves. And so what Jung, and I believe what Jesus is saying, is that we need to go into that garbage can and do what is all the rage now, start recycling. In other words, we need to go in and to lay bare our greed, our selfishness, our thoughts of vindictiveness. Confront them and stare them in the face. And let the grace of God shining light on them give us the power indeed to begin to learn how to manage them. They won't be eradicated, but they will be managed with grace, with skill, and with the power of God's Spirit. When that happens, we are less likely to do the kind of premature judging that we are apt to do, both of ourselves and of others. We are invited to a place of grace. and a place where we recognize, and this is what is so key about this psalm, why I wanted to read those verses. Do you hear what the psalmist said? After those wonderful, lofty words, you know me and you've searched me and I'm fearfully and wonderfully made and all these things. And then the psalmist goes on to say, how I hate those who hate thee, O Lord. The evildoers, I hate them with a perfect hatred. Did you hear that? Do you see how those two things live together? In the same heart? For we must recognize through the psalmist's own words that if I am fearfully and wonderfully made by God, so also is the one I call my enemy. My enemy is also fearfully and wonderfully made. For God sends the sun to shine on the good and the evil. And who am I? Who am I to withhold then prayers, grace, forgiveness, reconciliation, challenge? So the psalmist itself corrects itself. For notice how it ends. After all that vituperative and ugliness that comes out of the shadow self of that psalmist, comes out of the deep darkness and the rage and vengeance of that psalmist, notice then how the grace of God pulls him back. And he ends by saying, search me, O God. Search me. And see if there is any wickedness in me. Do you see? That is the balance. That is the truthfulness with which we confront our shadow selves. That is the truthfulness that we engage our penchant to judge and decide who's evil and who's good. By turning to God and say, search me. Because I am not fully aware of all that is going on in me. Search me. Help me find out what is wrong. Help me find out where I am in error. And lead me in the paths of everlasting life. God knows us very well. Knows our capacity for good. Knows our capacity for forgiveness and grace. Knows our capacity for generosity. Knows our capacity for service and the pursuit of justice. God knows and wants to activate that. But God also knows our capacity for selfishness and our capacity for vengeance and our capacity for greed and wants us to confront that. Our capacity to separate us from others. And even if they are, as the psalmist says, my enemies, they are my enemies because they're enemies of you, says the psalmist. What does Jesus tell us to do with our enemies? Judge them? Hate them? Kill them? Jesus tells us to love them, to agape them. In other words, to seek their well-being. Foolishness, don't you say? Foolishness. That's what they said to Gandhi when he tried to teach ahimsa and to love enemies. Foolishness. That's what they said to Martin King when he tried to reach out to those who were trying to kill him in the days of racial segregation. Foolishness! There have always been men and women, and dare I say, girls and boys, who have bucked the trend and have been willing to be fools for the beautiful grace of God to go beyond the judging of the evil and the good, and the vengefulness that we stir in our hearts for those whom we name enemies. You see, God knows us too well. Too well to let us be left to our own devices. And as the psalmist says and as the parable says, let them grow together, leave the judging to me, and let me, in the way I envelop you and love you and care for you and heal you and forgive you and challenge you and reconcile you, let me, says God, help you discover how to live as you are meant to live, with honesty and truth, with grace and faith, with love and justice. Because God knows us so well, we are in good hands. Because we have been searched out by God, the world is in good hands. May we be stirred in our lives and in our faith, reminded by the example of Jessica and Danica today, that we are to be followers of Jesus, baptized into the life, death, teaching and example of Jesus, let us be that to the world. Amen? Remember one thing, and I commend this to you. Bikele Galeta, some of you might have seen the article yesterday in The Citizen. He is now the Secretary General of the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies in Geneva. Born in Ethiopia, lost everything, was imprisoned, came to Canada as a refugee, educated, skilled, spoke English, not given a chance, got a job in a quickie store until he was finally given a break and it was discovered what was part of him. But you know what I want to draw attention to is what he credits as the way in which he was able to be resilient and rise again. And he credits his mother. His mother prayed every single day when he was growing up as a little boy, prayed all the way through his life this prayer. Her name was Alemi. God, give my children the wisdom to think good thoughts. Give them the ability to do good and the courage to help people in need. God, give them the patience to learn from today so that they are better people tomorrow. Every day she prayed that. Here's a woman, I believe, who knew very well the meaning of the psalm, who knew very well the meaning of the parable, who knew very well that God knows us very well. Amen.